버블.
Good evening and welcome to Burst of Bubble, the weird news show live on CamFM. I'm Michael Quintario and my co-host Chris Moten is finally back from America.
Hello. I've come back specifically for this show. I was thinking I'll stay in America, I'll make my life out there, I'll live my American dream. But no, there were bubbles to be burst. I have returned.
And so we'll get straight on with a story that has, like Chris, come all the way from the US of A. And this is a Utah highway was shut after 20 million bees escaped from an overturned lorry.
That's a fair number of bees.
I wonder, how do you know that you've got 20 million bees? I mean, they don't stand still to be counted, generally speaking. Do they just kind of, like, weigh the mass of bees and divide it by the mass of one bee? And
I think, yes, I think that's... you're saying that as though that's ridiculous, but I suspect that is exactly how you weigh a lot of bees. Now, I appreciate that bees fly, and that this might intuitively make weighing them difficult, but we all remember the thought experiment where there's like 100 pigeons in a lorry, and this is essentially that, but with much smaller pigeons, and also more painful pigeons. Or bees, in this case. So, yes, I think you pretty much stick your low loader on one of those truck-weighing majigs and go, how many bees? That's a standard unit of measurement at those truck-weighing things. Kilograms, pounds, bees.
apparently the owner of the Adi Honey Farm said the truckload, with a value of about £72,500 or $116,000 as it was originally, was pretty much a complete loss. It's like, well, yeah, bees not being noticeably easy to what's the opposite of disperse? Collect.
Yes.
But then they say recollect, and that's like remembering something. So
yes,
how would you
bees
say?
Are easy to remember?
I got stung on the lip by a bee once.
You remember it well. Pavlov strikes again. not Pavlov. Never mind. Maybe Skinner, actually, one of those behavior related psychologists. Anyway, yes, what we learn here, I suppose, is that this is what you're asking for if you raise free range bees. Is that, you know, they're going to escape. You know, the free-range bees are pretty much difficult to control, to capture, and so on. You know, once the hive is smashed, away they go.
It wasn't really free-range if they're inside a lorry.
Well, they're normally in hives. And when you want them to move from one place to another, you're going to have to put them in a lorry.
Yeah, but they pick up the hives and put them in the lorry. This is why I was questioning the weighing, because how do you negate the weight of the hive?
Weigh the hive? Before bees occupied it? I mean, okay, I think these are some really quite easily solved beekeeping problems, which I'm going to recommend you don't take up a career in beekeeping.
A beekeeper told the Reuters news agency, "We tried to move the bees as far into the metropolitan area as we could, because when those bees come alive today, they're going to be mad that their house is all broken apart." And I just realized I missed an opportunity to say bee instead of bee in that sentence.
Hmm? What?
One or two E's. I'm sure it's not actually easy to get across on radio.
I see. You're going to say, when those bees come alive today, they're going to be furious. Yes, I see what you're doing.
But also, I don't know, when the bees come alive today, you're like, have we got zombie bees?
I'm afraid so. They have been for a long time, but it's very hard to tell. if a bee is just plain old buzzing or going brains in bee language, those two things sound very similar.
Also, there's the fact that zombies normally can like shamble towards you if you're going for the old classic zombies.
Was that zombies?
It wasn't, but
it should have been.
But the bees would be shambling along the ground, except that bees don't walk so much as fly, so yeah. We don't actually notice their shambolic movements.
If we had regular non-zombie bees, they would be incredible. They would like travel at the speed of bullets. We would never have invented guns because we would have bees. The way you would, like, a duel would take place when you just lob, like, a jar of nectar at your opponent and watch as the surrounding bees just arrow into him. But thankfully, we have zombie bees. We're okay. Unless they're the fast kind. You know, unless these are, like, the 28 days later zombies. In that case, the regular bees would be very much similar. Except with less brains.
But the thing that really struck me about this news story is that this isn't the first time that something like this has happened.
Ah.
There has, in fact, been a truck crash in Idaho a couple of years ago where it was slightly less bad. It was only 14 million bees that time. However, apparently they went berserk. How do you tell?
They start stinging you lots. bee is very easy to diagnose. A zombie bee is difficult.
But the best thing here was that in the previous thing, there was loads of honey which spilt over the road. They called it a river of honey. And Fire Chief Kenny Stradenberg was worried about bears coming down now, the grizzly bears.
It will happen. Or at least, if Winnie the Pooh hasn't lied to us, it will happen.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I can get that bees would like... Not bees. Bears would enjoy eating bee honey, but I'm not sure going
and yet
down...
bees do not enjoy bear honey. Discuss.
Compare and contrast.
Mm.
Bees and bears. Which one is a zombie?
Again, difficult to tell. What is so different between bear behaviour and zombie behaviour?
Yeah. But, yeah, it also points out in this article, conspiracy theorists will be questioning why bees are being transported on America's highways, because that's what happened in the X-Files movie.
Oh, okay. No, I'm afraid I didn't see this movie, so you're gonna have to take this anecdote on solo.
I can't actually remember much about it, apart from the fact that at one point Mulder and Scully were running away from bees.
Okay, so
I think they were some sort of
that was the beginning and end of the plot, was it?
I think there was some special sort of like conspiracy bees, whether they were like actually like trying to pollinate some plants, which was part of the aliens' plan, or something like that, or possibly the bees stung people and killed them. I don't know. I can't actually remember. But
that last one isn't a conspiracy. That last one is just bees.
No. Like bees that could kill people who weren't just allergic to bees. Or okay, stung, okay. Just died with one sting, rather than being stung by 14 million bees in one go. That would send anyone's system a bit whizzy.
Sure, yeah, indeed. So I suppose you'd have like a cackling caped villain going, "I'm going to drive a truck of bees into the Senate," and then all the senators will be sort of batting the air with newspapers and going, bees! Oh, goodness, bees!"
That sounds quite fun.
As massacres go, it would be quite amusing to watch.
Yeah, I was say, that actually sounds quite fun. Can we just lob some bees into lots of meetings and just
which one of these meetings will be funniest when you fill it with bees?
Like the House of the Senate,
the convention of pastry chefs. We got the House of Lords. The House of Lords would probably be quite funny.
Yeah. The question is whether we've all like the ceremonial robes and stuff, the bees would think they were flowers and start trying to pollinate them.
Ah.
Get nectar.
Which is relatively tolerable. Next to stinging.
Yes. Perhaps they'd look like those people who do the bee charming and like try and win the world record for being covered in bees.
Is that actually a world record?
Yes.
Is that anything except for an Eddie Izzard sketch?
I'm sure there is a world record for like person most highest number of bees covering a person.
Please tell me Eddie at least gives out the prize. He's actually the only man qualified to go, he is adequately covered in bees.
Yeah, and like a comedian and comedian and a marathon runner, also a Guinness World Record judge.
He's a marathon runner.
Yeah, did you know? How did you miss this?
I was in another country.
No, this was a while ago. This is when he ran something like 40 marathons in 40 days. Because he's bonkers.
Yes.
Quite frankly, but somehow he managed to do this and not collapse. So, fair play.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well done, Eddie.
But moving on with our natural world section, we're moving from bees to cacti.
Indeed. This is two Germans who were trying to exit Mexico and had their baggage searched, and it was revealed that they were trying to smuggle 543 cacti out of the country. And correct me if I'm wrong, but cacti are mostly water, which would mean, you know, that's very much their raison d'existence, is to stock up lots of water, be full of water, and then remain so God willing.
And are you basically going to suggest that the reason that they got in trouble wasn't because they were illegally exporting wildlife, but because they broke the 100 millilitres of water rules that they bought in recently?
Basically, yes. It appears as though they might equivalently have nicked 100 canteen, 100 2-liter canteens of water, and sort of cackled their way out of the airport. And in either of these cases, this luggage must have been absolutely colossal. They must have been basically filling the departure hall with this enormous sack of cacti. So they're going, yeah, what of it? I'd put it on the scale, but it's about 10 times the width of the check-in desk, so just kindly put this on the aircraft, my good man.
I read that. Oh, it's bonsai cacti.
Bonsai cacti?
Yeah, that sounds like it should be a name of a band or something.
Or a kid show.
Bonsai kid
show. Cacti. They know how to love.
Yeah, really?
But they can't express it because they're so spiky. It's a horrible parable.
Yeah, prickly customers.
Ooh. Hee-hee.
But, yeah, I like the fact that it's 543, because that just sounds like, and I know they've gone 543, were they also, like, carrying 21 of something else?
Are you suggesting someone made this story up and did it lazily?
Yeah, it's a sort of number where you're like, that. No one ever has 543 of something.
It's practically unthinkable.
I'd be questioning 321 also. In fact, there are lots of numbers I would question, like if they had all digits the same, if they had like some sort of sequence going. So actually, I'm beginning to think that I'm not the best person to be judging this due to the sheer number of numbers that I would not agree with.
You've killed 3,142 congressmen. That's just pi. I refuse to investigate. It might or might not be pi. I realised I couldn't remember the third decimal place. 3.14, yeah, something. Yeah. I like the opposite of Rain Man.
Sun Man.
Oh. Occasional showers, man.
Yeah. It's interesting that they've just, like, really gone for the German angle here. Like, two German men. The German embassy did not immediately confirm the men's nationality or hometowns. So we've got some Germans. Well, we can't confirm that they're German.
Huh.
we're just guessing that they're German. Was it just like a really highly efficient way of stealing cacti? Were all the cacti just like really well packed into the luggage? Thus meaning that they didn't take up the entire departure lounge?
The most efficient way to steal cacti is to steal seeds. So clearly these weren't actually Germans. They were undercover Frenchmen.
Okay.
Who occasionally pose as Germans.
But I think that's enough of the cacti, frankly. Well, and our last story in this section is very tenuously related to the natural world, and it's actually also about consumerism. Because every year there's a list of the top dream toys at the Toy Retailers Association put this out. And people go, well, I'll possibly try and get the cheapest one on there for my kid. This year, one of them is called Doggy Doo.
Yep.
And it is, strangely enough, it is actually precisely what it sounds like. It's a game about dogs, a dog that does its business, and you have to poop scoop it.
Yep. It's a board game surrounding that. So presumably you overcome a series of obstacles that aim towards scooping up dog poo. I don't know, there'll be squares on the board that are like apprehended by park warden. Go back three spaces. Your pooper scooper was a defective, cheap Aldi knockoff and turned out not to be fit for purpose. Fine £50.
I'm never going to let you design a board game.
I'm not at fault for this one.
Actually, it's not so much a board game, just a game where the dog is loaded with plasticine, this little plastic dog.
Not actual poo, blessedly.
No. And you have a lead with a heart, strangely enough, at one end. And then the players take it turns to pass around the lead and squeeze the heart several times. And if the dog, squeezing the heart, if it, that makes the poop come out the other end, then they get to scoop it, and it's the first of three poops wins. I'm not sure whether the correct this means the correct tactic is just like whacking the heart on the end of the lead or not.
Right. Yes. I'm starting to think that this award given out by the Toy Retailers Association might be kind of a consolation prize of sorts. That sort of, if you show up at the design meeting and go, I've got a pooing machine, and everybody goes, all right, well, you appear to have built one, and there's no way we're putting this in a shop, so to the Retailers Association with you. It's just sort of, we've got these things, and we've built a million of them. We just need anything that will cause them to not be in our building anymore.
You say that, but there are some quotes here for from some kids who would actually quite like to get their hands on the doggy do. That came out a little bit wrong. Although, given what kids are like, who knows? Right there. Freddy 11 and his friend Harry 9. There you go. Sorry.
The ninth of the Harry line.
No, that's his age. Nice. Who would name their kid Freddy 11 and Harry 9? Does that mean that they're like the most recent kids, or is the person counting down the number of kids that they would like? Freddy 11, Harry 9. We don't talk about what happened to Susie 10. It's an interesting list, and I would like to point out that the cheapest thing in there is RRP 19 quid. So obviously, some people making money this Christmas.
Yeah, it's quite. I suppose I can't imagine anybody will actually buy this thing, but that's at saving pocket money up sort of level. So parents might be blighted with this item anyway.
I know. But if you've got any comments on any of the stories that we've covered, if you would like to suggest how you would sneak cacti in out of Mexico, if you would like to tell us what the plot of that X-Files movie actually was, or if you'd really like to try Doggy Do the Game, please get in touch with us. You can, if you're listening via the internet, you can just click on the web form. If you're connected to the internet but not listening via it, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk. You can also send a text message to us. Just put CAM plus your message to 80809, and the texts cost 10p plus your standard rate.
We're going to be back just after this quick musical break with more silly news stories.
On air, online and across Cambridge. Your station, your CAM FM.
Welcome back to Burst Bubble on CAM FM. That was Just Can't Get Enough by the Black Eyed Peas.
Now we're going to carry on with some a political section of the show at this point. Some silly news stories from the field of politics.
Yeah, tenuously political. More kind of like slightly related to politics in some way, but very definitely not our politics.
In this case, by a person running for the US House of Representatives. And if you ask me, that's proper politics. This is about a gentleman from Ohio, who is running for Congress using the alter ego Joe the Plumber.
Yeah, those of you who were aware of the US elections might remember that Barack Obama went to Holland, Ohio, and chatted with this guy. And now this guy's become a bit of a celebrity, despite the fact that apparently he wasn't even licensed to be a plumber in the first place.
It seems he's basically trading on that sort of I'm an honest to goodness working class, except for not like that, you know. There isn't Yorkshire in America. But nonetheless, you know, I'm a good old working class person, and I just want to see proper stuff done proper like. Is essentially the summary of his views. But he's running for Congress for the US Republican Party. And has got a reasonable amount of publicity out of this Joe the Plumber alter ego that he's pursued. His actual name is Samuel. Do you want to take a shot at the surname?
Samuel Joseph Wurzelbacher.
Wurzelbacher, maybe? I really don't know. But, yes, he's running for the 9th Congressional District of Ohio for the Republicans.
He has not always been a plumber. He did a stint as a foreign reporter during the Gaza War and said, if I were a citizen here, I'd be damned upset. So I'm telling it like it is.
War is bad is the pretty much the extent of that one. I like to imagine that this man is actually running for the pornography party, just because Joe the plumber, you know, that's a character in porn, isn't it?
I don't know.
The party already has like a naughty nurse in Congress, and they have a mortar-boarded head teacher who is firm, but I think you'll find rather fair running for president in 2012.
I'm staying out of this. I am staying out of this. basically the story is how your life can change if you end up on TV.
Indeed, yeah. Hey. What I wonder, you know, is will he have to pursue the alter ego? As in, like, he's developed this alter ego that, you know, I'm Drew the plumber, etc. You know, good old-fashioned working class honesty, etc. So is he going to have to pursue that in all public appearances? You know, like... you remember when Gordon Brown and Tony Blair were at their height of loggerheads, if that's a thing you can be at the height of, and they would have to pose as if they were getting along famously. So there was this famous incident where a reporter was supposed to be meeting with the two of them looking all harmonious, and as they walked in, they heard an aide shout, "Quick, start talking!" You know, so as to present the appropriate illusion. So will he have to do something similar, except for with plumbing? You know, like any time there's about to be a public appearance, will he have to quickly don his, you know, his plumber guise, so that a reporter will walk in and he'll be sort of kneeling down behind a toilet, sort of, you know, going like, "Bruh, infernal U-bend, I'll give U-bend," and then go, "Oh,
sorry,
goodness,
I'll give U-bend."
Yeah, apparently. And then stand up and go, "Goodness me, a reporter," except for not like that.
Will he be like visiting people's houses and saying things like, if I became in the House of Representatives, then I would come round and fix that for you?
I would personally come round and fix your bog.
I can see that going down pretty well.
It's a pretty practical agreement for a Member of Parliament. It's an interesting form of bribery. It's, you know, could you get done by the Commission for Expenses if you went round every voter in the state and fixed their lavatory? You know, does that constitute bribing the electorate?
I have no clue. but moving on, we are going to move to Turkmenistan.
Ah, yes. Yes, unhinged dictators do the funniest things is kind of the subtitle for this section of the show. The president of Turkmenistan, who is practically speaking a dictator, as it's a single-party state, has enacted a regulation which says that when you get married in the state of Turkmenistan, then you are compelled to visit all of the memorials and points of interest in the city, the city in which you're getting married.
So they've got the earthquake memorial, the monument to the Constitution, the monument to independence, and a Second World War memorial.
Right. It's essentially a sort of a mandatory, somewhat underwhelming family day out. Is sort of, if you got married in London, you'd be compelled to spend the rest of your day sort of wandering around the British Museum in a bit of a haze, sort of going, history. you know how the British Museum is a thing which, sort of, okay, so there definitely are people out there who definitely, you know, who genuinely want to go to it, but quite often it's a thing you go to because you're visiting London and you come from hundreds of miles away and you feel kind of obliged to do one of those tourist things that you ought to do whilst you're around, like the British Museum and the Science Museum, the Natural History, that kind of thing, see Tower Bridge, you know, that sort of stuff, and camp outside St. Paul's.
And you kind of walk around and then... you're going, "I've heard there's a Rosetta Stone in here somewhere." And you're just looking at every bit of stone that you can find.
Or is that the Elgin Marbles? One of those, yeah. I'm pretty sure we nicked something off Greece and or Egypt that is hidden within this building.
I think both the Elgin Marbles and the Rosetta Stone are in the British Museum.
Well,
I'm not
did a
going
good
to,
job with that empire.
I'm not going to say the definite, but I think
we don't want to implicate the British government with stealing priceless antiquities.
But for those of you more of an ecological bent, They also suggested that couples could also plant a tree at a nearby park and care for them and plant new trees on their anniversaries.
That's rather nice. I think this whole scheme is kind of... He's perhaps a rather practical man, and he's actually preparing people for sort of middle-agedness. He's sort of... You know, like another... If he'd lived in a more rural environment, then the resolution would be that when you get married, you have to then go and spend a weekend in a cottage in Wales, and it will be not that good, but kind of all right, and everybody present will think that it wasn't them who originated the idea, but I suppose I'll go along with it. That's sort of, you know, I don't know, maybe that's just my view of the average family holiday.
I was just also thinking, just like going, oh, it wasn't my idea, but I'll go along with it. It was just like how you saw middle age.
Time, it just sort of happens to you, really. So, what can you do? Go to Wales, that's what.
Moving on, we've got another one. This is from Iraq to Derby.
From Iraq to... Yes, indeed. Sorry, that does make sense. I thought for a moment then you were saying that Iraq had invaded Derby. But perhaps no one had noticed.
So what's happened here is part of the Saddam Hussein statue that was toppled in central Baghdad and was on all the news was brought back by a former SAS soldier. It doesn't say whether he's former because he was just like... Instead of being an SAS person, he was just like picking up bits of statue instead of actually doing his duties, but we'll give this person the benefit of the doubt. So we've got a 2-foot wide bronze buttock which was being sold at auction, and the highest bid was £21,000 from New York from a telephone bidder, but it wasn't sold because the guy Nigel Ely had put £250,000 reserve on it.
That's one expensive ass cheek.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where you're like, how do you imagine that it's going to come to that much?
The commodity might have been devalued by this point. I'll bet you anything that buttocks of Hussein are kind of like pieces of the true cross, that if you put them if you gathered them all together, you'd find you had enough to constitute some hypothetical 22 buttocked man.
Yes. People were saying, when it comes to modern history, freedom and liberation, it's very important, said the manager of the auctioneers, Charles Hansen. So here, just like imagining the fact that it might be very important, but it's a buttock. I can't see that being the most important bit, even if you thought that Saddam Hussein was just going to, like, sitting on top of the heap.
So if you did buy the buttock, what would you do with it? Because, I mean, so the obvious use is for kicking, of course. You know, there's a powerful symbolism of kicking somebody in the ass there. So you might, like, you know, mount it on the outside of your house or something, and then, like, each day you'd pass by and you'd give it a kick and be like, ha, still dead. But, I don't know, I mean, you could use it as a bumper for your car. That might be quite good.
It's solid bronze.
Well, yeah, right. It'd do terrible damage to the other vehicle, but it would also be quite a good talking point to sort of worm your way out of trouble with the van driver whose vehicle you've just ruined is going, did you know that's a priceless dictatorial buttock that just mashed your van into smithereens?
Oh, dear. No, Mr. Ely from Herefordshire, not from Ely, sadly, said he'd been planning to donate the proceeds from the sale towards helping injured ex-servicemen from the UK and US. Which is a nice. I like the symbolism of that. It's kind of like going, we're going to sell the bits of the person who we fought against to, not actually the person, the statue, to try and raise money for the people who are injured. But
that's going to be a tenuous argument for Saddam Hussein at the pearly gates. It's like, okay, Saint Peter, listen here. You see this ass? This ass was cast in bronze, right? And then that bronze was sold to a bloke in Herefordshire, and that bloke sold it for lots of money, and that money went to fund some people. Gotcha. Come on, let me in a paradise.
But I also find it interesting that Mr. Ely has now started his own art company specializing in war relics. And he's basically overvalued this particular one by a factor of 10. Well, more than that, actually.
It's probably not something he does very often. Like, you know, he doesn't value many asses. There's not a lot of precedent to read up on.
We just had an email in about a part of Hitler in the Albert Hall. I'm sure everyone can fill in the blanks there.
It's his moustache. You see the, you know, the lining along the top. That's actually his moustache.
Okay.
One moustache lining is on the Albert Hall. It excludes even the most windy drafts. That's why it is quite snug in there.
Okay, I'm not letting you write a board game. I'm also not letting you write ditties.
Specifically about dictators, or just in general?
Just in general. I know you only specifically failed with a ditty about a dictator, but as a precautionary measure, I am going to ban you from all ditties.
Fine.
But if you've got any more comments about any of the dictatorial works that we've just described, or indeed any of the other news stories that we've covered so far, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk. If you're watching, this is a radio, if you're listening via the website.
You can watch, there's a webcam up there, you can see us talk into these globular yellow microphone-y things.
Mine's blue.
It's exciting.
But if you're on the website, watching the webcam and listening to us through the player there, you can send us a message via the web form. And you can also text us. You have to text CAM plus your message to 80809, and texts will cost 10p plus your standard message rate.
We'll take one more of those musical break things, and then we'll be back to talk about some more silly news.
97.2 CamFM.co.uk. Your station, your CamFM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst of the Bubble. That was AKA What a Life by Noel Gallagher.
Yeah, well, indeed. We're going to talk about one last batch of silly news stories here. This is kind of the miscellany at this point. First and foremost, we have a story about Facebook, who have set up a data centre in Lapland. That place with Father Christmas and the reindeers and the lots of snow.
And now Facebook.
And now Facebook, yes.
So basically, they're going there because because it's so cold, they can just use the outside air to cool all of their giant heat-producing computer servers.
Yes, it's a very sensible thing to do, to be honest. But for me, the main concern about this story is that if you look at the area and like the GDP that's coming out of Lapland, what you realise is that this thing is like 10 times the value of this is like 10 times that. Facebook have basically bought Lapland by plonking this data center there. Facebook now has a country. They're that guy who breaks into a game of Risk when it's like 3/4 done. So I suppose I imagine human history to be 3/4 done. And then plonks, you know, one counter on, in this case, Sweden, obviously. And then gradually forms their sort of evil empire. So it started here, is what I'm saying.
As always, the news outlets have decided that we can't understand what 30,000 square metres is, which, to be fair, I actually can't. And so they've helpfully pointed out this is the equivalent of around 11 football pitches, this data centre.
Oh, fair enough. I, on the other hand, can't conceive of 11 football pitches. So I wonder if you could express that in terms of, a number of double-decker buses lying on their side.
Ooh, I thought that. I'm really bad at converting units.
Right, I thought so. How about a number of M&Ms tessellated as neatly as they can be?
As neatly as what? So, like, imagining each, modelling each M&M now to be square rather than circular.
Exactly, yeah. Well, number of Basset hounds that is being somewhat uncooperative when it comes to sharing the space with its neighbours.
Oh, no, sorry, wait, I just realised that there's a better way of... You can tessellate M&Ms. You can tessellate M&Ms better than just assuming they're square. You can have close packing. I remember doing this. I did this part one.
Kind of honeycomb looking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Here speaks a man who has stored his M&Ms efficiently in the past.
Here speaks a man who has finally had memories of his time when he was an undergrad.
You know the worst tessellation? Curly whirlies.
Oh, not so much, because surely you just like... They're kind of like rectangles. just with holes in.
So with lots, like, of, like, lots of divots and stuff. You know, like most chocolate bars, that, you know, that's pretty efficient use of space.
But you're not going to get that space because it's contained inside the Curly Whirly. It's not innately going to stop you from lining Curly Whirlies up neatly.
Well, yeah, okay. It's going to limit the maximum density of this, like, huge cube of Curly Whirly that I'm trying to make here. Like, if I want to create some... If I want to try and make the Curly Whirly black hole, to put the inevitable black hole reference that occurs once a week into this week's show, then I'm going to have a hard time. You know, I'd buy Mars, to be honest, if I was looking for a confectionery gravitational anomaly.
But moving back to the actual news story, the mayor of Lulea is very happy to have Facebook in his city, and you can tell this because he's got a giant Facebook thumbs up like symbol.
Yep. Well, it doesn't look quite like the real one. I'm thinking that the mayor's aide has been asked to sort of cut this out by hand with, like, scissors and PVA glue.
Like they're equivalent of Blue Peter, who are doing, you can make your own like symbol. All you need is some cardboard and some sticky bag plastic.
It can be the size of a mare. Now just get Facebook to come to your country and your mission is complete.
Yeah, to me, it almost looks like someone's chopped off the fingers a bit, which is slightly worrying.
So where will Facebook go next then? So the reason they went to Lapland is because it's really cold. I mean, it's good to be able to cool your computers just by opening the window instead of having this, you know, really expensive, really powerful air conditioning system. So where next for Facebook?
I was going to suggest outer space, but that's not actually that good.
What, space?
Yeah, because
space is great.
No, I mean, space is great as a concept, but wouldn't actually be that great for cooling computer servers, because it's quite hard for your computer servers to lose
heat. Not a lot of conductivity. Yeah, you'd have to lose all your heat by radiation. Your computer would have to have like a grill mounted on the top of it, like, you know, as in like a proper grill on which you might cook things to perform all the radiation. What you want is you want one of those moons of Jupiter that are very, very cold, but also have a really dense atmosphere. Titan. Titan would be good.
You want Titan on the stick.
What?
You want the moon on a stick.
Why do I want it on a stick?
Oh, no, it's just a phrase. Cause, like, wanting the moon on a stick is like a phrase of wanting something that is, like, basically impossible to get.
Are you quite sure?
Yeah.
Wanting the moon on a stick?
Yeah.
I think only you have been using that phrase.
No, you
know when in the past you've said, you want the moon on a stick, and then nod sagely. What other people are doing is looking baffled. You should recategorize that expression that you've seen and note to yourself that that means bafflement. Now go back and consider the rest of your life with that new knowledge.
I think I'll save that for later. We've got some radio to do then. I don't want to be re-evaluating my entire life.
It'd be pretty brave radio.
Yeah, I would want more than an hour to do that. So, email in if you would like a Michael Quintero re-evaluates his life live on radio show.
24 hours of raw psychological deconstruction.
Oh, no.
Coming up on KFM.
I'd want 25 so I could do 1 hour per year of my life.
Ah, that'd be nice.
Although the first couple of hours are going to be really boring.
When I was a tiny baby, I barely ever witnessed bafflement.
But, yeah, it's also been described in this news story, assembling the servers is like building a Lego model. The parts just snap together, and the servers slot in and out their racks by flipping a couple of catches, the firm explained. As basically all servers do, as far as I'm aware. You're just going to put them on racks. That's not in a new Facebook server thing, is it?
No, not particularly. They are just describing servers there. I think they were just sort of... They were rebutting the people who thought that building a server farm is like if you were trying to, like, build the fourth bridge or something. And you'd have to bring sort of legions of peasants out in order to construct Cambridge... construct Facebook's marvellous compute pyramid.
Yeah, but building the fourth bridge isn't like Lego. It's like Meccano.
This is true.
I also feel I have to point out I told you so, because we have had an email from Jasmine who has said, I've heard the moon on a stick phrase before. Sorry, Chris.
That's because you know Michael. You think it's a phrase. This is the thing. Michael has been putting this about.
No, I'm not. I'm not going, do you know what we should do? We should all use the phrase moon on a stick so that I can score some points over my co-host in a future radio program. I sent a message back in time to do that, violating the laws of causality.
All right, then I'll make up my own phrase and then get people I know to say that. And whoever's phrase first makes it to popularity, they win. What will my phrase be? Let's see. You can't throw a dog into Huddersfield. There you go. You can't throw a dog into Huddersfield. What it means is that, so because Huddersfield is very low lying, so you might suppose it was easy to throw a dog in there from a neighbouring place. But actually, Huddersfield has a fair old wall around it from ancient times, you know, and so throwing it, you would likely just hit the wall.
While you've been blubbling on, I have Googled moon on a stick.
Ah.
And it's there. It's in Urban Dictionary. You can't deny this. Would you like to Google, you can't throw a dog into Huddersfield?
To see I don't need to confirm my phrase with this Google, this cheap Googling.
Although I am amused that both eBay and Amazon offer the moon on a stick. Which is brilliant.
That's very kind of them. What's the cost?
Infinite pounds, sure.
On eBay. Let's see. Oh, curse you, internet. There we go.
It's a book. It's a book title as well.
Ah, see.
You can get the moon on a stick for 99 pence. So that's what Facebook should do next.
Hang on, is that your pen name?
No.
Aha. You thought you had me. You've released the book.
If I release a book, do you think I'd be sitting here?
I'm not saying it went well. That's why nobody's heard of it.
It's just on eBay for 99p. Exactly. Oh, damn.
That's the one master copy you got.
That's actually what props up all the tables in my house now.
That one copy of Moon on a Stick.
All the book copies that never sold. It's a sad, sad tale about someone who wants something and then fails to get it. And in fact, that was precisely what happened to me after it came out. Well, moving on from Facebook, we have Life Imitating Art.
Yes. So the headline is Slumdog Millionaire, Indian Becomes Real Life Winner. So if you read the rest of the story, what you find out is that this Indian guy won the local version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And that's it. When they say life imitates art, oh, it's just like the film Slumdog Millionaire. In that film, an Indian guy won Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That has also happened. Now, considering the billions of Indians who exist, this is, you know, the level of surprise is fairly low. But... But there was a film, so he gets an article.
And yeah, that makes it newsworthy, totally. I mean, it's like Joe the Plumber. except that was he became noteworthy because of news articles about him. This is someone getting news articles about him because of a film. So actually, it's not all that similar at all. Forget that I said that. Moving on. A hacker has leaked passwords as a warning to naive Swedes.
And root vegetables pay very little attention to password security.
Basically, this is a story that someone hijacked the Twitter account of a right-wing MP in Sweden and just sent loads of tweets, of private email accounts. It says details of more than 90,000 private email accounts. I'm not sure whether that's just an email address, which isn't particularly all that private. It's like leaking the fact that, I don't know, 12, I don't know, Bridge Street exists as a place.
Well, there's some value in having big CDs of email addresses for spam advertisements. You know, that's a thing. You know, people genuinely do trade those.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
So there is something in it, but... Yes, no. This group has they've been mischievously tweeting from the account of this right wing MP. Do we know in particular what he's been tweeting?
Apparently the passwords and usernames, possibly.
Just those,
emails, it seems, actually. So it is actually slightly more than the email addresses.
Ah, yes, okay.
But I'm impressed by the hacker's online name is SC3A5J. I'm wondering whether, like, if you change the 3 into an E and the 5 into an S, does that make a word in Swedish?
Yeah, I have no idea. Unfortunately, I know absolutely nothing about the language. What I would say is that if I'd owned somebody's Twitter account in this way, I'd pwned it. if I'd pwned his Twitter account in this way,
you're totally down with the kids.
I am down with the kids. Then what I would do is I would probably start making up revelations to see if I tweeted them. Then the person in question would try and sort of beat the news media to the story by sort of coming out with his own side of the story. So, like, you know, for example, I might out the agriculture minister as a robot. So, you know, and then see if I flicked on News24 and there was the Minister for Agriculture going, okay, so mistakes were made with the Member of Parliament's cyborgification program. I am unashamed.
Have you ever read iRobot?
I have not. Because was the Minister for Agriculture a robot?
No, but basically the rule of the world possibly was in it.
Oh, okay. And was he outed by a mischievous Twitterer?
No, basically someone was trying to prove that he was a robot, and he was basically just throwing loads of things in the way, and then it was resolved by him punching someone, because robots can't hurt people in those stories.
That's clever.
Someone then did, the main character of the story, did then point out that no one checked that the person he punched wasn't a robot as well, which is totally allowed.
He could just delude himself, presumably.
Yeah.
And spend all of his time sort of, you know, convincing himself, humans, they go, ow, but yeah, they quite like it, to be honest.
Yeah. I recommend that that book. There's lots of other stories in it that I haven't spoiled, because it's all short stories. I apologise for that. I'm not sure what came over me. I can spoil stories, but so long as I believe that people I'm spoiling to are all robots or something, I don't know.
And I am a robot, so that's fine.
But, fine. One last story. We've got like 20 seconds left. Royal Mail inundated with Christmas job applications. Did they all arrive? Who knows? Ho-ho, there we go. Quick, cheap gag at Royal Mail's expense. But, yeah, obviously lots of people want to work for them. So thank you very much. I've been Michael Quintario.
And I've been Chris Mosen.
And join us again next week for more silly news on Burst the Bubble, live on Cam FM. Next is The Science of Fiction with Andy Holding.